This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. It's Tuesday, the 15th of April, 2025, and I'm Alec Hogg with your BizNews briefing. Earlier today, I spoke with Dr. Franz Cronier. Two highlights for you here of an interview that you'll be able to pick up on the YouTube channel at BizNews TV on YouTube. Well, we are giving you lots of information there, so I'm sure that these insights will tempt you perhaps to go and watch that full interview with Franz. First, his thoughts on the IRR's polling data, which shows that the Democratic Alliance, for the first time ever, is now more popular than the African National Congress. I asked France whether the description that Herman Pretorius gave it as a political earthquake was overdone, or would it actually be something that, well, describes the situation very well. Here is his answer.
No, not at all. You know, like if you think back that 20 years ago, ANC was approaching 70% of the vote. And it's now below 50 and hit 40, and a few polls now that have hit it at in the 30s. The country's changing at lightning speed. But behind that is it remains a simple thing, that ANC voter behavior is a function of the material circumstances of people in the country, and that as long as real reform is delayed, as long as the fixed investment rate doesn't lift, and then the growth rate, and then the rate of job creation, socioeconomic circumstances are going to continue to put downward pressure on ANC support. Let's just flip it around. What was the ANC doing? I mean, we've got the data on it for them, that their own voters opposed tax increases by a margin, I think, of 3-1. So they effectively have for 6 weeks run an opposition campaign, and boldly so. And more so, the GNU's popular, as we've told you before, with the public and with ANC voters. So in aid of forcing through their tax increase, they have threatened the future of the GNU. It's completely crazy that the ANC strategy team allows this to happen.
Well, that graph that you saw there was from February in earlier this year, where the ANC was sitting at 32%. That was the Social Research Foundation graph. The latest numbers from the IRR has the ANC below 30%. I spoke to Franz as well about his return. He's freshly returned from meeting with power brokers in the United States and in Europe. And if he could give us some insights into where South Africa's relationship with the US is according to the way that the rest of the world sees us.
It's interesting, vis Africa broadly, because the response of a lot of Africa to Mr. Trump's trade moves was read by the Americans as being very positive. Good relations with the DRC, good relations with Rwanda, Mozambique, others. South Africa standout case of the opposite. I mean, even little Lesotho, which apparently no one can find on a map, even little Lesotho was spoken of in favorable terms. The Zimbabweans had reached out to say, hey, let's do a deal. But opinion on South Africa and its approach wasn't good. South Africa at this time does not have a single senior diplomat in America capable of talking to anyone senior. My understanding is that the United States would be delighted to come to terms with South Africa and strike some sort of deal, whatever form that may take. And I think from South Africa's perspective, that's very important, even just from the ANC's perspective. for the ANC to survive. Let's just talk about America from the ANC perspective, do something unusual to survive, because that's where it's at now. The rate of fixed investment must lift very quickly. Now, the United States has the economic firepower, and the dollar at this morning, probably again, just under 19 to 1, goes a long way. The potential, therefore, of interesting the U.S. in South African infrastructure, minerals, the like, as part of its broader approach to Southern Africa is immense. But you don't even have a single person there who over recent weeks has been able to talk to anyone in that regard. I think many of the delegations that have gone to from South Africa have misread the room. There's no point in going in this climate and talking about South Africa's history or that it deserves help and support. As one quite senior chap put it to me, we don't care. Go home to these delegations, come back when you've got a plan or a deal that you want to do with us.
Franz, before we move off this, Mr. B.C. Jonas, who endeared himself to South Africans when he stood up against the Guptas, has now been made the special envoy to the United States. But of course, stuff has surfaced where he was very insulting of Donald Trump. It does appear as though we might be shooting ourselves in the foot again.
Yeah, I believe that stuff was circulating in the U.S. last night already. And that will make it difficult in the current environment to be effective. I mean, the advice we've given on to the South Africans as well is you need people there that would be popular at Mar-a-Lago on a Saturday evening. That's what you need if you want to fix this relationship. And anything short of that is going to be difficult to do.
Yeah, let's start seeing the world as it is, not as we might want it to be. Mar-a-Lago is where Donald Trump holds court. It's his home. If you want to get through to the man who is now the president of the United States, as Franz says, well, you need to get into that inner circle. Someone who is in the inner circle, or certainly appears to have been, is the Argentinian libertarian president, Javier Milei, who took a chainsaw to the state spending in Argentina, cut back massively on a country that was, well, it was already bankrupt, but it was just getting even more bankrupt, and has balanced the budget, would you believe, in a year. This has made him a favorite of those in the White House who like to see economic disciplines being returned to the United States as well. And you would have thought under those scenario, that circumstance, that if there was one country in the world that would be exempt from Trump tariffs, it would be Milei's Argentina. Not so. But the Treasury Secretary, Scott Peasant, the American equivalent of the finance minister, is in Buenos Aires at the moment. And in an interview with our partners at Bloomberg, gave a little bit of insights into the way that the Americans are going to expect others, Argentina included, to negotiate.
When it comes to the trade negotiations, I'm sure you spoke with President Milei about the 10% rate that Argentina was hit with. Do you think at some point that can come down to zero?
Look, I think we're going to start the negotiations. And just like with everyone else, I'm telling them, bring your A game. We'll see what you got and we'll go from there.
Can any country go to zero?
We'll see. I don't know what's going to happen with the negotiations, because we've got a whole box of things we've got to overcome: tariff, non-tariff trade barriers, currency manipulation, and subsidization of labor and facilities. So there's a big menu there.
Subsidization, non-tariff barriers, some big issues there that South Africa are going to have to deal with, as you may be aware. Well, if you aren't, here's a newsflash. South Africans pay 30% more for their motor vehicles, so that the international motor manufacturers can be subsidized to send exported cars from this country into international markets, including the United States. So the reason why you pay so much for your car is so that South African motor manufacturers or South African-based motor manufacturers can get access into the U.S. market. That surely is a non-trade barrier subsidization. Yo, there's a lot of A-game work that needs to be done when those negotiations go forward with the Americans. Something else that came out there of that conversation is that Javier Milei, who has balanced the Argentinian budget, approaches the world very differently to what we do in South Africa. In fact, many politicians in this country haven't got a clue what balancing a budget would mean. We proudly tell the public that we have a primary budget surplus. What that means is take out the interest rates or the interest payments that the country pays, and then we actually balance the books. That's like saying, I've got a house that's mortgaged, but forget about my mortgage loan. I'm actually balancing the books, although every month the bank is saying to you, hang on a minute, I'm having to capitalize the money you should be paying on your mortgage loan, which for most people, most of us, is our biggest payment by far. That's how economically illiterate South Africa's politicians, or some of them anyway, are. To balance this budget, you'd have to cut spending by 20%. That's the reality of where we are in South Africa. Malay's done it in Argentina. On to some of those unintended consequences of the Trump tariffs. They keep piling up. Latest insight on this is from TikTok, where quite a few Chinese influencers have been explaining to the Western world that their very expensive branded products actually cost a fraction to produce. Here's our partners at Bloomberg.
Breaking bad at Hermes Boutique will cost you $38,000. But what is the real cost out of the factory? Today, I'm going to break it down in front of you, step by step.
These have been some of the most watched and very visible videos online over the past few days as well. If you're a TikTok user, if you're on Instagram as well, people are talking about these starting to appear. But they're essentially these buyers or these videos that they purport to show people that are in factories or different supplies, possibly. Again, none of this is really confirmed, so it's sort of, you don't get a lot of transparency, I guess. But what they're doing is taking items and then breaking down the cost of those items to essentially say that there's a huge inflation that's just based on the Western brand value alone, or the French brand value, because that first video we saw was an Hermes bag, for instance, the Birkin, and saying if you actually broke down all the different components, you're only talking about several hundred dollars, just over $1,000, for instance, versus paying, say, $38,000 in store.
Yeah, and you know, I would imagine you're actually getting, I wouldn't say you're getting pushback, because we reached out to some of the actual brands themselves and they've declined to comment on this, whether or not we are actually seeing some of the influencers at the actual factories where their actual goods are created. But I think it underscores the tariff story from a really, this reminds me of decades back of the role Alibaba played, when you wanted to find something, you wanted to source something from China. They provided that platform for you. In this case, the information has probably arguably gone a step further and a step deeper. And I think the point that Cameron Johnson was making yesterday, it's, you know, the rules of the game have changed. This is the democratization of information. On if you're a buyer in Western markets, and you want to be able to understand how much it actually costs for your Jordans or your Lululemon, varied amount of goods that they do, you're actually getting them at very, very cheap. The cost to make them is actually, the margins you get from these companies is actually quite substantial.
Which I think we knew to an extent, of course, that you're always going to have that markup. But I think what's been interesting is just the sheer volume of posts that we've been seeing. And
it's hard to miss them.
Yes. And that kind of questions, you know, is this sort of any sort of calculated attempt? Certainly, it's just another signal of that pushback that we see from China against these tariffs. from President Trump.
Yeah, they're reaching out directly to the consumers who are affected themselves.
I think a deeper issue here is the way the Chinese approach to business is so different to that in the Western world. In China, you keep the margins low and you make a heck of a lot of it. In the Western world, you keep the margins as high as you possibly can, and that often means making less of it. Well, there's all kinds of unintended consequences coming out of the Trump tariffs, and this is another one. Will we see the business models changing around the world? Well, something that did come into very sharp focus in the last week or so has been the impact on Apple of the potential hike in tariffs. 145% now if you import anything from China into the United States. And a heck of a lot of the components on Apple phones come from China. Well, good news for Apple shareholders. After the share price had gone below $170 a share, and we pay attention here because Apple is in the BizNews exponential model portfolio. Last night, the share price went back above $200. Reason? Apple has been exempted from Trump tariffs. Here's our partners at Bloomberg.
So here was the plan. Before this exemption came into place, they were really looking at repurposing their India operations to become basically their U.S. operations in terms of supply chain.
Right.
They were trying to quickly get to a point where they can build basically all the iPhones they needed for the U.S. in India, which throughout this process, all indications were it'd have a much lower tariff than China. Then this exemption came into place. The 145% was removed, and we went down to the 20% that's just around fentanyl and stuff like that. Now Trump and Lutnick, they're all saying that there's going to be a new tariff for devices with semiconductors, which obviously would apply to the Apple products. But all things considered, it's very likely that's only going to be a slim percentage of what that 145% would be. So, in other words, with this exemption, Apple avoided its biggest crisis and supply chain issue since COVID hit 5 years ago.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up India because Apple makes about 20% of its iPhones in India, we've recently reported. But I want to get into the relationship of Tim Cook with the president. Tim Apple, as I think he called him in his first administration. I mean, how open is that dialogue?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like Tim Cook and some of the government affairs people at Apple, a guy named Nick Amon, they have a very open relationship with the Trump administration. They've been lobbying them hard over the past couple of weeks on these tariffs. I mean, this would have been destructive to Apple. It would have raised prices probably by a few hundred dollars at least. It would have created all sorts of supply chain issues for them. They've been preparing for this. We just put out a story that, according to the latest data, iPhone shipments surged 10%. Between the beginning of January through March.
Wow.
Not because people were buying more, but because Apple was stockpiling their U.S. channels. This was something we reported on a few weeks ago. Not only Apple, but Meta, Google, a few other companies are doing this. They were stockpiling because anything you had stateside when tariffs hit, it wouldn't be subject to that tariff. Now they have a little bit of breathing room. There wasn't much breathing room. Apple's operations people were burning the midnight oil on this the past several weeks. They had the India plan in motion. They needed to ramp up production big time there. Now they have a few more weeks to figure out how they're really going to do this, how they're going to spread things around to avoid major price increases.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking, out of the ordinary.
Well, let's bring the tariffs local now and go back to an interview that I had last week with Matthew Poole, who is an international trade expert. He's a lawyer at Weber Wenzels. And the knock-on effects of the Trump tariffs, he was warning us, would not just be that you are going to have difficulty accessing the U.S. market, but that other countries are now being excluded from the U.S. market, and here particularly think China, where the price of goods from China into the U.S. is up 145%, and that pretty much takes them out of the equation. Well, they'll be looking for a home elsewhere. And that means other parts of the world should be very seriously considering the impact Chinese exports into their country will have on domestic companies. Let's just have a look again on this conversation that I had with Mr. Poole.
What we can expect is at least there will be a shift in the countries that are exporting to the United States. And if in a particular industry production does ramp up, there will be an overall decline in those exports going to the United States. So those exports are going to have to be looking for a new home. So if countries were exporting to the United States and aren't exporting there anymore, they're going to start looking possibly European Union, possibly other countries, where they're going to then try and shift those volumes. So South Africa won't necessarily be first in the list of countries they'll be looking to, but the knock-on impact is going to likely be increased import volumes coming into our own country. So if you're a domestic producer in the SACU region, it's something to be considering is what measures do we need to be looking at to protect our own market following this.
Point you make about exports from other countries being switched to new markets, including ours, which would have an obvious impact on domestic production.
Sure. So I think it's going to go quite broadly and across quite a wide range of industries. And certainly if I was producing any product in South Africa, it's something I'd be looking at. So it's assessing the level of exposure currently to imports and then having a look at which of the possible protective measures might be available and starting down that process.
And the issue there is quite simple. South Africa has got a lot of added costs when you are in a global competition. We have BEE, we have employment equity, we have all kinds of added minimum wages, all kinds of added costs that do not exist elsewhere in the world. Now, it's lovely to have them, and it makes us feel good as a society, but it's going to be not so good as a society if our already record unemployment rate just keeps rising. Time to get real, guys. Time to get real, Pretoria. And here's another issue of getting real. While Washington is fighting with China, China knows that the impact there is that it's going to have to take all of those exports that it was sending to the United States and finding new markets for it. And it is on its bicycle. There's a charm offensive going on from the Middle Kingdom right now with President Xi visiting other countries in Southeast Asia, trying to pull in his allies or potential allies a lot closer. Our partners at the Financial Times of London had a look at that this morning in the FT News briefing. Here's host Mark Filipino.
Vietnam, Malaysia, and Cambodia are incredibly dependent on exports to fuel their economies. And in particular, they send a lot of goods to the United States. But with tariffs from Washington, they may need to find new markets. Enter China, whose President Xi Jinping is visiting the countries this week with a basic pitch. Beijing is open for business. The FT's Ed White has been following the situation. Hey, Ed.
Hi.
All right, so it seems like U.S. tariffs have opened a big opportunity for China to grow its global influence. Why is Xi starting his diplomacy in Southeast Asia?
Well, this trip looks quite hastily organized, obviously in response to these tariffs, but also Southeast Asia is key to China from both an economic and a strategic point of view. You know, this is China's backyard. Trade and investment has actually been growing very strongly into Southeast Asia over recent years. So it's important, clearly, from Xi Jinping's point of view, that he keeps the likes of Vietnam and Malaysia, these key regional economies, that he keeps these firmly on side.
Okay, so China is eager to keep and strengthen the relationships with these countries. How eager are these countries to deepen ties with China?
This is a tricky one. We've spoken to experts about this question, and I think there's a slightly mixed view. So on the one hand, political leaders and the populations more broadly are, like in many places around the world, quite skeptical of becoming too reliant or too dependent on China. On the other hand, China's presence as an economic force in the region is nothing new. And we've actually seen over recent years that China has actually really been leading other rivals, including the US and Japan, in terms of having more investment into localizing manufacturing in Southeast Asia. So if Xi Jinping's able to offer more of this kind of thing, I think that will actually be quite welcomed.
Yeah, right now they got these baseline 10% US tariffs, but the so-called reciprocal tariffs are paused. And how difficult will it be for, you know, smaller countries like Vietnam to navigate this new trade environment with the U.S., given all the uncertainty that we're talking about?
Well, we've already seen the U.S. say that they're open to starting negotiations with these countries, but it's just very, very difficult to know whether that will last or whether the U.S. president's position will change again. What we sort of know more broadly is that in recent years, there has been a push by the Biden administration to stop countries partnering with China in certain areas. So this has been more about things like cutting-edge technology, specific sectors that could end up in the hands of the People's Liberation Army. A bigger issue has also been that Chinese companies use places like Vietnam and Malaysia as a manufacturing base, and that's so that they can skirt existing tariffs on Chinese exports. But what we're seeing now from the Trump administration is obviously clearly different to what we've seen before. So it is difficult to say where this is actually heading.
So then is China actually well positioned to take advantage of this moment?
To be honest, I think this really remains to be seen. So on the one hand, yes, China has some technologies, especially in kind of key decarbonization areas like wind, solar, batteries, that will be welcomed by other countries in Southeast Asia. But this idea that Beijing and Xi Jinping himself has been pushing, that China is like a bastion for free trade and is upholding the international trading order as the US steps back, this is clearly quite a stretch. And I don't think anyone's really buying it. But the other thing actually is that at the end of the day, you know, if Chinese exports to the US really do drop significantly, there is going to be hundreds of billions of dollars of Chinese made products looking for a new destination. And no one seems to have a good answer as to how Beijing really deals with that. So one thing that would be really interesting to come out of this trip from Xi Jinping is to hear from local officials in Southeast Asia what he is actually offering on that point.
Ed White reports on China for the FT. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.
Well, when you hear an Aussie say quite a stretch, we in South Africa know exactly what he means there. China is coping, I guess, to this point, at this point, with what the United States is throwing at it. But as Ed mentioned there, there's hundreds of billions of dollars of Chinese exports that are going to be looking for markets somewhere. What's going to happen here in South Africa, where our production is uncompetitive because of all these well-intended but really misaligned ideological ideas that have been imposed on business in this country? Perhaps this is the shock that South Africa finally needs to get the politicians out of their la-la land and come back to reality, the reality of a highly, highly complex competitive world where a job is not a right. A job needs to be earned on the basis of being competitive with the guy who's across the ocean from you. The public know this, and that's why we are seeing the changes, the seismic changes in the political landscape as far as who the public would be voting for if we went to the polls today. They know that South Africa's had a free pass for a long, long time. They know that it's time for us to become part of the world. One wonders when the politicians are going to eliminate the derangement and start listening to what's happening on the ground. I hope it's soon. I'm Alec Hogg. Look forward to the next time. Cheerio. This Biz News Briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.